You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 357. John, it's just like Hitsville, UK. The band came in and knocked him dead in 3 minutes 59. That's wrong. It's 2 minutes 59. I knew that. Hi, I'm Adam. This is the Punk News Podcast. We are recording a show, and you're going to listen to it. On tonight's program, Mr. John Gentile. Hey, John.
999, that lovely number 9. Multiply by any number you can see, it always comes back to 9. Anybody? Anybody? Square one, anybody? Anybody? Square one was a mathematical education program for elementary schoolers in my youth on PBS.
I don't remember that at all. I'm going to blame Canada for that. Also, joining me, Mr. Ricky Frankel. So this is the new classic crew back together. Hey, Ricky, how are you doing?
I'm good. John, I was probably too... I wasn't born for that, probably, so I'm sorry I couldn't get that reference.
Honestly, Ricky, you were not born for that. You were not born when Square One was on TV. It also had not Mathcapades. What was it called? MathNet. MathNet was two cops that solved problems through the powers of math.
Ugh, that sounds exhausting.
It was great. It was great.
Honestly, that sounds like the kind of thing that I would have watched and thought was great. we didn't have that. I don't know why we didn't have that.
It was awesome. Square One. I wonder if it's on YouTube. PBS.
Maybe it's because I didn't donate. Maybe if you donate, you had access to like all secret shit.
No, PBS is probably just for here. You probably had something the equivalent of like on the CBC, right?
No, because the CBC is, the CBC is like a government run broadcaster, but it's not a public broadcaster like PBS is. Like we definitely had PBS, but ours was probably out of Buffalo, to tell you the truth, because this would have been like pre-cable, so like aerial TV, so we always had like TV signals out of Toronto and out of Buffalo, so we probably had Buffalo PBS. I don't know, maybe I was just doing stuff.
Well, listen,
doing kid stuff.
I've got great news for you. All episodes of Square One are on YouTube.
Oh, that's just top of the list of how I want to spend my time.
Thank God.
You gotta have priorities in this life. So we have a show. There's lots of stuff to talk about that happened this past week. Before we do, I guess we should hop into the mailbag, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about some records that we bought because we haven't done that in a little while, and people like hearing about consumerism. And I believe John, you've been holding on to a very special letter for Mr. Ricky Frankel.
We've got a sweet cherry here. This is from Colin. Okay, I'm not trying to be mean here. I really don't want to be mean because Ricky sounds like a nice, sweet kid. Okay. But look, if you don't want to discuss silly shit like how much you paid for a record, should you really be on a public podcast? Ricky shies away from discussing any kind of topic that is controversial. He also doesn't want to discuss lots of other things. And don't let me get started about him talking about his record collection and what colors his vinyls are. I'm sorry to say it, John, but it's true, and that's from Colin.
So I mean, you should first correct him on pluralizing vinyls like that. That was weird.
Yeah.
I think
faux
he's being funny.
Faux pas from the internet.
Shy away from controversial. This was a while ago, but remember where we all were pissed off and we all had like one rant each? That there's one where
that's true.
Like, I don't get, here's the thing. It's not that I shy away from like confrontation. I just pick my battles very carefully. That time that I was referencing was, just that cringy video of Laura Jane Grace and Miley Cyrus doing a song together. And it was just so blech, you know? And so if you go back for what episode that was, but I mean, I am yelling into my microphone like a crazy person for what, 15 minutes. And when it talks about, when you talk about what I pay for stuff, that's how I was raised. I was raised not to talk about money and how much I paid for stuff. That's just something that I was raised with. I don't know what else to say. And then the color of my vinyls, I'm a vinyl nerd. I don't know what else to tell you, dude. Yeah. But I mean, I and also usually John and Adam have, you know, have a little bit more life experience and have a better, you know, and have a broader view of stuff. So I like to listen to them and then add on top of stuff. And if I, if there is something controversial that I want to get involved with, I'll definitely jump in. I just choose my battles carefully. That's all.
You're like, we're almost, like, we're almost dead. So our bridges are burned at this point.
I mean, I don't feel like I don't feel like any of my answers right now are like that controversial or anything like that. Sorry. You know what? Listen, some people, I cannot believe that there are people like older than me that are so stoked on the new Marvel movie. And you know what? That's fine. But you know what? When I get a colored record that's rare, you know what? I'm gonna nerd out like them. And so that's just kind of how it is. Sorry, Colin. I guess. I don't know. Let's move on.
So,
Adam, I think our little Ricky's growing up. That was a very mature answer.
I mean, the immature answer would have been to say, "Fuck you, Colin. Thanks for listening," and then move on. But
no, I mean, listen. I think those criticisms, I think his questions were, I think, were fair. It's just, you know what? I think I don't feel like I need to start something here. Unless the only thing I will start, though, is if a Transplants Wars happens again. If that happens, it's fucking on.
Ricky, don't start a Transplants War.
Also, listen to the Transplants Wars. That was some shit. Okay, you want to talk about controversial and yelling? Those episodes were just. So I know I went ballistic at least once.
I will say the episode where we're all pissed off about one thing and we all ran about that is literally my favorite Punk News podcast episode ever. That's my favorite.
I don't even remember this happening. Like, it sounds like something that would have happened, but I have no personal recollection of it.
So here's what happened. It was when Brittany Strummer was still on the staff. I was just, I think I'd been on the staff for maybe like 6 or 7 months. And so I talked about the Laura Jane Grace Miley Cyrus video. And then there, you guys talked about, I don't even think I should name the band, but it was something she posted that got them really pissed off. And it got public for some reason, from what I remember.
Yeah, we reposted something that they released to the public. And they were mad at us for posting something that they put on a public media. Yeah. Do you remember that one?
That has happened several times, but kinda. But yeah, sounds like something that would make us mad, because as you describe it, it seems irrational to be mad about that. So yeah.
So I was mad, John was mad, you were trying to be level-headed, and that was about. And
no, Adam came out. Adam was the one that came out swinging on that one.
That's right.
I came out swinging.
Right.
I came out swinging against a certain pop punk icon, and I think we thoroughly won that battle. Adam came out swinging on that repost thing, and you came out swinging on the Laura Jane Grace Miley Cyrus thing.
Yeah, I forgot what episode number that was, but it must have been in the 200s though. But yeah, if you want some fucking drama, Colin, that's one to find.
I love that the thing that you get mad about is a Miley Cyrus related thing.
Oh, do you not remember? Did you not watch that thing? It was just like, what?
I'm just water off my back, Ricky. I did not pay too much attention to it. I'm like a duck. It just.
It was just, and I wasn't like angry about like the cause that they were doing or like for Laura for doing it, but it's just like. And I don't want to go down this rabbit hole because I'm just
no, we don't want to.
But it was just like
to have like an ulcer or something.
It was like, Miley, get the fuck out. That was it. And it was it raised my blood pressure some, I'm sure.
I think it's interesting that your response to someone giving you shit is to deflect all of your criticism onto Miley Cyrus.
What would you rather, Justin Bieber?
Oh, I don't know. We gave Ricky the opportunity to not listen to this email on air and not telling him what was in it, and he bravely decided to confront his demons.
I thought this was actually this was better than I thought it was going to be, to be honest. I mean, oh no, oh no, Ricky talks about colored vinyl too much when we talk about vinyl. Fine.
Okay, so Bela Lugosi has joined us on the podcast tonight.
All my vinyl is black. Blah.
Oh boy. All right, is there anything else in the mail, or are we going to talk about colored vinyl for a while?
Let's get to the mail. You can always reach, let's get to the vinyl. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Let's talk about records.
All right. So, John, you suggested this. You have something in particular that you want to talk about, or you want to?
I'll do three. On the record collecting section of the Punk News podcast, we often talk about our victories. Well, recently I had one big victory, one big loss, and one okay. So what should I do first? My okay, my victory, or my loss?
I think you need to start at the bottom.
All right. Well, so listen. This has happened to everybody. I was at one of my favorite record stores. I talk about this record store all the time. On Facebook, they said, we got in a whole bunch of punk records. Come on down for punk records. So I went on down for punk records. And I was flipping through the 7-inches, really good haul of 7-inches. A lot of stuff that I wasn't into, but the person whose collection it was had taste, which that's always – honestly, like when you're going through a collection, if you see someone has taste, that's always a great sign, which means you're probably going to find something. And lo and behold, I saw a 7-inch of Black Flag's 6-pack record.
Ooh.
And I have original pressings of all the Black Flag 12-inches, everything from Jealous Again all the way through I Can See You, which so I basically completed my Black Flag collection. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I mean, I'm not gonna if you want to get Nervous Breakdown, you can drop $400 and buy it, but I'm not gonna spend $400 on a 7-inch record. But if I see something in the wild for a reasonable price, I'll pick it up. Maybe it's time to start collecting the Black Flag 7-inches because they are of themselves. Their own little pieces of, you know, their own little works. You know, Nervous Breakdown is a full statement. Six Pack is a full statement. TV Party is a full statement. Even Damaged One is a full statement. Or Louie, I should say. So I saw a six pack, and it said Red Labels $25. And I guess Adam White and Ricky, you guys know this, like. Like for punkers, we look at things at like first press, second press, third press. But like people that collect like Beatles and Bob Dylan, they don't think of it in presses. They think of it in labels. Like for Bob Dylan, is it the 6i version or the 2i version? For Beatles, is it red labels, blue labels, you know, yellow labels? And the reason they do that is they're actually talking about presses, but it's actually, I guess, a more informal way to talk about presses, and also it's a little bit less accurate. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I don't. I have a very limited number of like Beatles records, well, so I
feel
I don't,
that like the way that we handle pressings today is more a symptom of the collector market that we're in. It's a symptom of both like the collector market and the fact that we're talking about things that are of extremely limited runs, right? So back when, you know, I mean, comparing to the Beatles is such a weird thing because they were such a massive band. But let's say we're talking about the Beatles and they're going to have something come out and they're just going to make a bazillion of them. And, you know, manufacturing was different then. So then if there is a variation between, you know, the factory cranking them out at one point and then the factory cranking them out at the other point, you're more likely to identify a variation by something that's in the art or something physical that you can see on there, as opposed to these days when, you know, what's a first pressing of an LP for a lot of bands these days? Like, I don't know, like 300 to 500 records, maybe, right? Like that, maybe yeah. That's too much even, like, and I'm talking about bigger bands, right? So, you know, Pick from a list of whoever, but like, you know, if, well, I can't name bands right now. What can I name bands? Like,
Danzig.
Like, Danzig's not a great, like, this. All right. We're going to talk about the Lillingtons in a while, right? Like how many, did Toby Press say of the Lillingtons? Why did I pick a band that I cannot physically say? right. Like, Sheer Mag. Sure. Like, well, like one of these records from a band that, like, you know, they have a fan base, but, you know, we're still talking about like an independent rock band. They are not going to sell a million things. They're probably going to be conservative and press like 300 to 500, maybe 200 of these things. And there's more of an incentive if you're going to go back and press more to switch it up a little bit. I think because precisely you could sell more than one to the same person. Like, you know, if you're, you know, an Against Me fan, you, and you're a collector, you may go back and buy the green version of that record if you don't have it.
I know that. I know how that goes.
Right. But the, like, the variance in something that was like from the 60s, I don't think they were, they weren't made variants for the collector. Like, the collector sort of like figured out the variants after the fact.
I think it's by, I think back then you have to look at the, not the serial number of like the, of the,
well, the Matrix press.
Yeah. You have to see what's, you know, like what's, you know, sort of carved into the vinyl.
Yeah. Like, I mean, or if there were, if there were variants between things, they were usually for like, you know, like a pretty interesting and storied reason. It's not like they're going to say like, oh, we've gone and we've pressed like, you know, we've made some blue ones now. It's going to be something like, say, like the Butcher cover of, of Yesterday and Today, We're like, no, these were repressed with a difference, not for collectivity reasons, but because like, oh shit, we got into trouble. We better change it up. Right. Like they were,
right.
There was more going on that way. It wasn't so now they're red. Like it wasn't that. So I don't know. Did that answer your question,
well,
John?
Well, what I was really asking was, do you understand the concept that Beatles and Bob Dylan collectors look at label colors as opposed to pressing? But we went off on that.
That was a fun tangent. But anyways, yeah, continue.
The point being, it said six pack, red labels. And I was aware that six pack had two early pressings, an original press and a second press that came out like the same year. And of course, all the Black Flag stuff has like 90s, 2000s presses and whatever. And I didn't pull out my cell phone to, and watch, I said to myself, listen, this record store, they're not as cheap as they used to be, but they're accurate and you can believe them. So if something is priced at something, that's about what it's worth. Maybe, you know, there's a couple of dollars bumped up, but that's because it's a store, so that's fine. So I didn't pull out my cell phone because I feel that's poor form in the record store and rude. Is it poor form in the record store to pull out your cell phone to look up prices and that kind of thing? Is that poor form? Is that rude?
I see, here's the thing. I do it, but not for prices necessarily. Like, Discogs has an app, and what I'll do is if I find, like, let's say like a, you know, a color 7-inch of like a, recently it was like a Sick of It All 7-inch, and I saw there was like one yellow one and one red one or whatever, and I needed to know like, well, which one's the first pressing. Like, I'll do that, but
yeah,
I don't really do it.
I do the same as Ricky. I've never really pulled something out and checked price, but I'll check. I mean, I'll go and I'll check, you know, what version of this I'm looking at. And I will also, and I'm really sad to say this, I will also look at my own list in Discogs and go, do I own this? I feel like I might own this. Look, I don't. What a.
So is it poor form to check prices in the record store? I feel that's a little rude.
They don't know. You're not announcing it, right?
I see. I feel like they do because every once in a while, when I look at the cell phone and they see me, I feel like, oh man, you know, it's like, well, you don't trust me. You think I'm going to rip you off? That's how I read. I want the listeners to comment. Like, is it poor form to check prices or to look at your cell phone in the record store? Is that poor form or is that?
You should just pull out your phone and just yell like, "There's lots of Pokemon in this store right now. I'm catching all the Pokemons that you got. Look at them."
So, anyways.
Well, just one thing.
So anyways, I buy it. It's $25. I take it home. I play it. It sounds great. I look it up. 1990 press worth $6. So I totally got busted. And I don't think they were trying to pull fast one. I think they just weren't quite diligent in pricing it. Most record stores do price their stuff on Discogs. I think they just weren't pricing it. So, I mean, just weren't that diligent in catching the price. So sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. On this one, I bit the dust, you know, and I lost out, you know.
Well, the other thing is when I go to record stores, I go in with a list in mind of records.
Oh, I don't.
No,
I go in. I just say, what do they got? Let's see.
Well, I mean that too, but I'm just saying, like, I also go with in mind is that, you know what, I'm going in because I don't want to have to pay for shipping, and if I get hit with a little bit extra, you know what, I realize I'm just keeping a store that I love alive, you know, or at least helping.
Yeah, but see, I agree. I'm definitely willing to spend $12 for a $7 record or something at the record store.
Yeah, I mean, also, if you buy a $7 record online, how much are you paying in shipping?
Do I know how much I'm paying in shipping? Because it'll make your hair fall out.
Anyway, so sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I lost this time. Here's my second one out of three. I recently also just completed my AC/DC 12-inch collection, which I'm super thrilled about because people say, oh, John, there's only five AC/DC albums. But that's not true. There's five American albums, but then there's four more Australian albums. But even there's more than that. There's actually – I got a rare Netherlands press of AC/DC's Powerage album. And the reason this is important is because this one press – has an additional song on it and a completely different mix of the album. And of course, Powerage is famously AC/DC, Bon Scott, Eric, their wimpiest album. However, the Netherlands press has a much punchier sound to it, and it rocks like the other albums. And you wonder, why didn't they use that for all the presses? And they just didn't. I guess they just felt that it was too punchy or too loud. So it's a unique press with a unique track on it, Cold Hearted Man. Only from the Netherlands, only on that one album. So I was excited to get that. That wasn't too big of a score because I just went on Discogs and bought it. But that was cool to get. So now I have completed my AC/DC 12-inch collection. And speaking of 12-inch collections, I also just recently completed my Misfits 12-inch collection. And this one was a cool score. Adam and Ricky, what is the name of the live Misfits record?
Evil Live?
Correct. And Ricky and Adam, is there only one version of Evil Live, or is there two versions of Evil Live?
I've seen there's definitely more than one.
There is the original 7-inch version, which has 5 tracks, and then there's the 12-inch version, which has about 12 tracks. And I'm not collecting the Misfits 7-inches because they're all like literally $600 to $1,200, so I'm not going to waste that. However, you can pick up the Misfits 12-inches if you see them in the wild. You can get them for like $20 or so. On Discogs, again, and I hate to say I'm buying everything on Discogs because I'm not, but I just had some recent Discogs score. There's a German version of the 7-inch version of the Misfits Evil Live on 12-inch vinyl. So it's the 7-inch version of the record with the 7-inch tracks and the 7-inch mix, but it's on 12-inch vinyl, and it's got a unique cover to it. And it's usually about a $40, $50 record. And I saw it online, and it said $17.95, discounted because it has scribbling on it. Oh, and I said to myself, scribbling?
No.
And so I said, for $17.95, I want this record. I'm buying it. And I had an idea of what that scribbling was.
No, it wasn't. Come on.
I got the record signed by Danzig, signed by Doyle, signed by Jerry Only on the back. And I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
Oh, my
so that,
God.
That was my big score. So it's the German 12-inch version signed by three of the original Misfits. Well, not original Misfits, but classic Misfits.
God damn it, John. That's a huge win.
That was a big win.
So interesting question I'm going to bring out of that then. What's your feel on stuff that is signed?
Honestly, I don't really care that much, to tell you the truth. If I can have something signed or something not signed, I'll take the signed copy. Because I do appreciate it to a degree. It's like an artist signing their painting. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to pay a premium for it. And Danzig's the man, but he's not a deity. He's just a guy. So his signature is really meaningless. But it is cool to have on the thing that shows, I'm an artist. This is my work. I've signed it like an artist would sign a painting. So I think it's neat, but it's nothing I'm going to go out of the way to do.
I don't usually buy premium. I usually won't buy the premium if they're signing it. I mean, there are rare times where I think I have, but I love getting my record signed at shows if I can do it. I think 30 of my, at least my 12 inches are signed, and then I have a few 7 inches too, but, it's something I really like. I mean, to me, I just like puke at the notion of me taking a selfie with someone I listen with a band I listen to. I'd much rather have them sign something and have that forever instead of something superficial like that.
You see, I'm now thinking the opposite. Like I was at, and John, you had one more record you didn't do, didn't you? No, I'm going to jump right into mine because it's related to this story. So, while I was at the Ottawa Explosion, I saw a handful of bands play in the lobby, in the front of a record store there called Vertigo Records. I don't know why I said lobby, like in front of the cash register. Like it's not a hotel, it's a little record store. So I saw band from Sudbury called The Apettes, and then the band that we played on last week's episode, Tommy and the Commies, and then the Boogie Boys out of Halifax, that are the best punk band in Canada. So the Boogie Boys played it. So I went and I bought the Boogie Boys LP because they had a stack of them on the table there. Now, this was actually a bad thing for me to do, and I'll explain why in a minute. But it's on Drunken Sailor Records, which is a record label out of the UK. So for me to order it means I have to have it shipped overseas. So, mm-hmm. you know, and the band is from Halifax, which is far away. So I'm like, am I going to get a copy of this? I have to buy it at this festival, and that is that. And there they are. So I just need to kind of buy this and carry it around with me for the rest of the day. In retrospect, sort of bad choice because I bent the fucking corner of it as I was, you know, going about the rest of my day. But you know what? I'm not too heartbroken about that because I'm not intending to sell this thing. I'm intending to play the shit out of it until it disintegrates. So whatever. But when I bought it, the really nice lady that was working the cash was like, do you want them to sign it? Like, they're all just standing around. And I was just like, no. And I wasn't quite sure, like, how to answer that. Because on the one hand, like, it was less that, like, it wasn't so much that, like, no, I don't want them to besmirch it. It was more just like, I feel like kind of a tool asking. And...
Well, she was offering.
She was offering, but I don't know. I'm gonna be like, wow, your punk band is like super fucking weird and crazy, and I love them. Can you please sign this? It's like, nah, that's not the level of cool that I'm going for here. I just wanna I wanna give them $20. That's what I wanna do. I don't wanna have to like it did not fit the vibe of what was going on to me. It was like to stop and ask someone to sign it. Particularly because like their front man, is it Cody Gugu, I think his name is. He like his whole onstage persona is that like he's weird. He's stomping around and he's making crazy eyes and he's lurching and he's doing all kinds of like crazy shit. And like there's no stage, right? Because we're just in the front of a store. So I don't want to like switch from like you were just lurching around being crazy to hey, can you please sign this? Like no, and like it didn't seem right. So I meekly was like, no, that's okay. I'll just take it. But yeah, I was a little bit kicking myself because I sort of bent the corner of it, but then I was like, oh, whatever. I'm just going to keep playing this. If I want one to like, you know, put under glass, I'll get another one. So the record is fine. I bought less at this thing than I thought I was going to, if for no other reason than that sort of taught me that I didn't want to carry shit around too much. But I did buy a handful of things. The one that I'm sort of stoked over is I bought the full length from a band that we played a couple episodes ago called Bonnie Doon that plays this weird and wacky sort of like drony sludge slash surf slash X-ray specs punky stuff. So they're just a local band out of Ottawa. The record is local Ottawa enough that it is not on Discogs, so I have to actually go enter it all in. But I'm stoked that I got a copy of that because, again, I would not be able to get one of these things otherwise. I'm way less interested in records that I can just go get. And I think that's probably the part of my brain that's trying to make me save money. and even for bands I like, and like, I'm bad about this with bands I like I don't physically own a copy of, I don't know, like the last two Against Me records, I think. And for no other reason than like, I could get one at any time. And that makes it a little bit less interesting to me. Like I could go to probably any record store and get a copy of Shapeshift with me. And I like that record. I just haven't because it just sort of feels like, do I need to get rid of $20 today? Because I can go do that, right?
I'm sorry, you will be spending more on than $20 for that one.
All right, but you know what I mean, right? Like, yeah. things that feel available. I don't know. I'm just not entirely interested in going and grabbing them. I grabbed a copy of the new Tough Age EP that was released at the festival, like on stage. Like they had like the box from the company that shipped them to them, and they're like, here they are. We just got them made for this fest. So it felt sort of like I needed to go buy one of those. But then this is the thing that I was interested in buying more than a lot of stuff, and I don't really know what to do with it, but it just felt like an artifact. So there's a band out of Montreal called The Famines. It's a two-piece garage punk act. The Famines have this, I don't know, it's like a art project slash record label called Pentagon Black. And what Pentagon Black has been doing is really like experimenting with the format of how you can release stuff. So they did two compilations of like all these small sort of like underground Canadian bands, and they didn't have, I don't know if it's like, it didn't seem like it was a good investment to go like have those pressed as records. And it was the kind of thing that I think a lot of people would have just went and made tapes for, but they decided that these were going to be paper compilations. So the first two Pentagon Black compilations are, they went and they like to like a newspaper press and pressed out like these big poster sized pieces of art that somewhere in the fine print on the paper has like where you can go download the songs, like some sort of little secret URL that's on there. But it just seemed like such a weird, you know, piece, you know, like just like a piece, like something to go get, right? Like at the band show, they had like a couple of them that were like in frames that were sitting there. And the release show that, or the show that I was at, was actually the release show for the third version of this compilation. And for the third one, they made the Pentagon Black compilation just like a 7-inch sized card that just has some art on it and the code on it. But the first two were like these like full big newsprint poster things. And I'm like, I kind of want those. Like I see they have some of them here. It again, it's like, it's sort of like the thrill of the hunt, right? Like, I'm like, I don't know where I would ever get one of those. They feel sort of like they feel important to me in the sort of grand, weird story of this underground Canadian music, especially given like all the stuff that I'm trying to cover on that Some Party newsletter that I'm doing. Like I want those. Like give me these newspaper pieces, please. So I actually went and I bought some of those, and I'm quite happy about them. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, if I'm going to frame them or just file them away somewhere, but it was weird. I'm down with this. I'm down with this art project vibe that you're doing here. Like I'm down with sort of the really DIY sort of like, fuck you, we don't even need to make a record that you've put together. So yeah, I picked those up. And so that's very interesting to me that I now own those. I don't know what to do with them, but I got them. Anyways, Ricky, you can jump
in. All right. Got the Instagram ready. You know, I don't have a ton that I've gotten since the last time we did this. Let's see here. So what I'm going to do is I'll talk about the couple. I got like two things at Punk Rock Bowling, and then I got one like right after. So the first thing is, actually this kind of comes off with the autograph thing. I got Mobina Galore's first record called Cities Away at Punk Rock Bowling, and they were cool enough to sign it. When it comes to like getting an album signed, I'm pretty shameless about it. I've stayed at a show for, I think the longest was like an hour to get a whole band to sign it. And,
Hanson?
Nope, the Falcon. And, for me, it's always been worth it. It's something it just makes it extra special. And it's a little bit more special than just buying a signed copy. It's like you actually interacted with the band, they signed it for you and all that stuff. Anyway, so, yeah, I got that record. And then, you know, Fat's been doing something really cool for these big festivals. They've been, like, pressing these flexi packs. And so I got the Punk Rock Bowling one. And Colin, if you're listening, this is colored, too, on black flexi, white flexi, and orange flexi. And the Mobina, by the way, the Mobina Galore one was just black. But I'm really liking these. I have one other one that I bought on Discogs. But I mean, this and it just has like a, it's like a little comp of like new stuff that they that they're putting out or have put out, and sometimes they'll like this one has
who's on it, Ricky.
So I can just read off the track listing. So Teenage Bottle Rocket has their song RoboCop is a half-breed sellout, that'll be on their new record. Western Addiction, their song Honey Creeper off their amazing album Tremulous. Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, The Times They Are a Changin'. Bad Cop, Bad Cop, Woman Archist from their new album. CJ Ramone, Surfer Girl, which that's an exclusive for this. And then the Bomb Pops, Polluted Skies, which is also an exclusive for this too. So I think these are really cool, and they're not super expensive, and they're nice. They're really cool souvenir, but like you know, you can also play it too. It's better than just a T-shirt. And then let me see here. And then after that, you know, I got home and I got the new Lillington 7-inch, Project 313, just on black.
Well, look how lovely it was when you said that band name without stumbling all over yourself like an asshole. That was nice.
Yeah. Hey, what can I say? And I guess I have a gift for radio. I don't know. Somehow this came on. This came on gray vinyl too, but I don't know how you got it. So I guess it was just luck of the draw, and I got a black one, which I'm fine with. And that's it. I mean, nothing else too much. I'm waiting for like the new Teenage Bottle Rocket album to come out, and I'm waiting for my Heart Sounds record and all that stuff. But yeah, that's about it.
Ricky, that was very reasonable. I don't know why anyone would write in and criticize you about that very reasonable.
Oh, don't bait me. And listen, we've all been criticized, Adam, except for you.
Oh, God.
So true story, I yelled, yeah, fuck Ricky, man, slammed my hand on the table, pulled my headphones out of my mic, and then I don't know what happened. So I'm back.
Look what you've done, Colin. You're tearing us apart.
Well, he's tearing apart my recording equipment. Oh, shit. All right, so we play a song? We should play a song. All right, So Ricky, I'm playing this song for you only because... there's a story with it that I think you would be slightly interested in. You are a big fan of the Rebel Spell, right?
I am. I actually played, I don't know if you remember, a couple weeks ago, I played a song from Aaron's new band. They're a former guitarist.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this, I'm not playing the song that is related to this, but the story is related to this. I saw a bunch of like punk... frontmen people play some singer-songwriter stuff in an old church, and the one that was headlining it was a guy named Jesse Labore. I'm probably pronouncing his French last name wrong, but he's from Vancouver, and he has a song that he played there that you can find on YouTube. I'm not sure which of his records it's on, called You Were a Rifle, that he wrote about Todd from the Rebel Spell. Have you heard that?
No, but you know, that's in reference to like the Rebel Spell's big song. I am a rifle.
Yeah. Well, this is, You Were a Rifle, and it is, it's pretty like Jesse was a good friend of Todd, and it was just like, it's pretty wrenching. But anyways, though, you should go find that on YouTube if you want to go check that out. That said, Jesse's got a record coming out this year. I'm blanking on what it is called, but it's out in July. This is probably the first single from it. It's a song called Flames. If you are a fan of, say, like Frank Turner, this is probably right up your alley. So this is Jesse Labore. Let's say Labore. Out of Vancouver, BC. And the song is called Flames. It is going to be on whatever record he has coming out this year, which you should go find. Look him up on Bandcamp. People, and then you'll learn what it's called. So anyways, here you go. The song's called Flames.
In the shadows of the morning light, the snow has turned the ground to all but silent. There's nothing to be heard. It's only broken when I hear a voice calling out a sound, but I cannot make it out. Before the sun can even break through the trees, the cold has drawn the feeling from my fingers. I cannot shake it off, and time slows down when I start counting light, I burst into flames. Reach out my hand through the dirt of my grave to say I'm not quite ready to die. To admit, if only for a moment, then I won't feel sorry for myself, because I won't feel anything at all. I won't feel anything at all. And in the space between my ringing ears, a buried hunger cries out for more. But there's nothing you can learn that you cannot find in waking hours, as far as you can reach and as long as you can stand. Then at night you'll burst into flames. Reach up your hand through the dirt of your grave to say you're not quite ready to die, and to admit it for as long as you can hold it, then you won't feel sorry for yourself. But if you wanna feel something tonight, I feel myself falling, I look to the hands that have held me before. If I push you away when I need you the most, it means I can't find the right words to correctly speak from my heart. But I can write them in a song, and I can hope you will sing along. One day I won't burst into flames, and that dirt from my grave won't be too much to remove. When I'm finally ready to die, I'll say forget it, it's never gonna happen, and I will feel sorry for myself, because I wanna feel everything I can. I wanna feel everything I can.
All right, we're back. We got a bunch of stories that we're going to talk about. First off, Laura Jean Grace, who we've mentioned a couple times on the show, mainly because we talked about Against Me, and we talked about how mad Ricky got about something or other on the internet a little while ago. So it's been announced that Laura Jean is going to be receiving something which is called the Icon Award at this year's Alternative Press Music Awards. That's an award show that is happening on July 17th at the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio. So there is a little interview that is over at Entertainment Weekly. Speaking of punk scenes here, at Entertainment Weekly, where they interview Laura and talk about the award and this and that. Laura previously actually gave one of those awards to Joan Jett, and I believe she is the third person to win the award after Marilyn Manson, and Joan Jett won it before. I have some thoughts, but John, do we need to pay too much attention to the Alternative Press Music Awards?
Do we need to pay? No. I mean, listen, this is kind of the same as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but with even less credibility. It's just some company that says, we want to give this person an award. And so when a band subjects themselves to this, and you know, listen, it's nice to appreciate bands. But on one hand, it's like, well, what gives Alternative Press the authority to decide what is worthy and what is not worthy? And by picking someone, they're excluding everyone else. And so Adam proposed something a while ago that I actually think was a better way to approach this. Instead of giving out winners or giving out icon awards, why not just say, and this year we're going to appreciate this band, and this year we're going to appreciate that band. But does Alternative Press... unlike the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is backed by Rolling Stone magazine, which at least has a legacy of rock and roll and was at rock and roll, not at the beginning but close to the beginning, Alternative Press is a magazine that was developed in the 90s strictly on a commercial basis. So this is kind of the same like the Entertainment Weekly or People Magazine Awards. I just don't care. And why should
I
mean, care?
I don't want to take away from Laura's accomplishments or say that she's not deserving of whatever, but my read on this when I first read it was I was like, oh, is that a big deal? Like, are those a thing? Because like, you know, John, we can make up like the John Gentile Awards, but like no one would give a shit, right? So I'm like, oh, are the Alternative Press Awards a thing that is news, or is it just like a promotional thing for Alternative Press?
I think it's a promotional thing. They pump a whole lot of money in, and they make some back by selling tickets. But I don't think it's something that anybody actually cares about. You know, like the Nickelodeon Teen Awards or whatever it's called. No one cares about the Nickelodeon Teen Awards. The only reason people care about the Nickelodeon Teen Awards is because kids are watching commercials and they're like, SpongeBob's going to win the Teen Awards this year. And the kids are like, oh, I love SpongeBob. But no one is watching this because they think that AP Press, Alternative Press, has any real bona fide ability to determine what is and what is not worthy of getting awards. But I'm glad Laura Jane Grace is getting awards. You know?
I'm trying to tread a little bit lightly here now that my life involves me being involved in like a prominent music award thing. So I don't want to completely like discount the value of doing music awards because it's part of what I do now. But that said, I'm not sure who grants these things. Like, I think it's voted on. But like by who? Is it just like AP a website. Click thing? Go to our website and click on the ad.
I think you have to sign up and then with like an email and then they let you like go through like, you know, best drummer on a screamo album or whatever. There are a lot. I don't know.
I believe it may also help if you purchase advertising space in the magazine. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't mean that seriously.
You know, I'm just going to be consistent. I mean, we've taken shots at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame like how many times on this podcast?
Yeah, but
I honestly don't think these award shows they do much. I think it's great. I mean, listen, I don't want to take away from like the awards, like these, I guess this Icon Award is somewhat of a big deal. But we're awarding like alternative music now. Wasn't the whole point not to have to, was to say, you know, fuck the Grammys. We're doing our own thing. So that's where I'm staying with this. I'm not a fan of these award shows, and I don't know anyone that makes a big deal about this one in particular. It sort of reminds me of, and I don't, I would, it reminds me, 1 year Comedy Central tried doing the comedy awards and it just failed and they never did it again. And this sort of, and because no one paid attention, and I don't know anyone that pays attention to this. So I think this is much more of an advertising thing than anything else.
Woo. Punk news coming out hard against the AP.
I have nothing against AP. We credit them all the time. I just don't this award thing. I feel like it's moot. I mean, unless you're trying to make money, then make money. Then just be honest.
Having an award show, there's a degree of like
self-congratulation.
There's like a degree of audaciousness that you have decided that you are going to be the one to dole out the awards. Like you. And I'm going to step up for Polaris here because that's what I'm involved in. Like the whole shtick with Polaris up here is that like, all right, you know, it's from a round of voting from a, you know, collection of like a couple hundred music journalists from across the country, from sort of like all geographic reasons and different genres and things like that. And that is supposed to give what we're doing at Polaris, I think, some degree of credibility in that they're saying, you know, like that's how it's put together and here's who the jurors are and everything else. And you could probably quibble with like, oh, the jury isn't representative of this, that, or the other, or why aren't these people involved in the jury or whatever. Right. But at least like that's the stand that they're taking with it. I have a problem probably because I read too much 538 with anything that is determined with like a click poll. Because that seems too problematic, you know. Log in here and click here to vote for X, like that. I don't know. I never believe those results too much. But you know, if these things are just being determined by something like that, or I guess worse, just being determined somehow internally at AP, you know, I don't know. I don't know why. I guess why academically I should care.
And also, it's not just punk bands. It's all like the screamo bands that we all rail against all the time. It's not just like
everyone needs a parade.
It's much broader. I guess, for whatever reason.
All right, let's stop making enemies we don't need to make and talk about Gene Simmons. Why are we talking about Gene Simmons? So Gene Simmons, we talked last week about how he was trying to trademark making the devil horns with your fingers, in particular if that involves your thumb. And he has decided that now that is a worthless gesture and has abandoned that. John, is there any more story here than Gene's?
The only story is that Gene Simmons, being the shrewd businessman that he has once again figured out a way to use public funds to raise his own PR. But what's the end game? The end game clearly is to make money. Is this making Gene Simmons any more money? I don't know. Or maybe money isn't what he wants. Maybe just attention is what he wants. Maybe the money is secondary. I don't know. Well, anyways, the United States government is the sucker for falling for this game, and we probably spend it couple foul on his behalf. Thanks, Gene. Good
maybe,
work.
Maybe he wants to be president.
Well, he can. He wasn't born in America.
He was born in Israel.
What do the rules matter?
Okay. Good point.
I just this stupid saga. I just was like, I saw the headline.
Stupid saga.
I just saw this because I wasn't on last week, but I saw the headline and I said, it's about right. And I'm not going to click on this article. And I didn't. And I just, I think this is more for attention. I mean, how often do we hear about Kiss nowadays? I mean, they're still touring and stuff, but I mean, I remember the album when I saw them, it was an exclusive through Walmart. I think he's just trying to stay relevant as much as he can now. But he has to be pushing 70 now. Right? Someone? 60s at least.
Yeah, 60. He's 60. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, this was dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, this was dumb. That's the theme of tonight's show.
All right. Oh, we know what the name is for this episode.
Yeah, so I should write that down so I'm not scrambling to try to figure it out at the last minute. Yay, someone's typing it. Yeah, this was dumb. Cool. All right, so this next story is one that is of personal importance to me because
Tastemaker strikes again. Yeah,
credit for this, and all whoever succeeds from Canada, I'm taking credit for. Bryan Adams, Celine Dion,
Justin Bieber, Sum 41.
Hey, did you know that Bryan Adams' name isn't actually Bryan Adams? It's actually like a weird name, and he changed it to Bryan Adams.
Yusuf Islam, right?
No, that's Cat Stevens.
No, that was Bryan Adams. Okay, yeah. No, I knew that. I don't actually know Bryan Adams' real name. I don't care either, to tell you the truth. Okay. Pew Pew Pew, which is a band which has surmounted the fact that they have a really dumb name, has signed to Side One Dummy Records, and they've released a new video at the same moment. So these guys are out of Toronto. They're a four-piece. They play songs about drinking and eating pizza and
friendship
and friendship, but it's less friendship than the kind that John doesn't like, and more friendship in the drinking beer. There's friendship, John, when you're drinking whiskey, while sitting on the porch of an old farmhouse. There's that kind of friendship, and then there's this kind of friendship, which is where you're drinking six packs of PBR before you go out to the bar. So that's what this kind of friendship is. So anyways, Pew's been around for a while, a long time, kind of gigging in the Ontario region and playing shows around here. And they were on Royal Mountain Records, which is the records label that Pup was on up here in Canada. And they are following Pup down to Side One Dummy. And Side One is going to re-release Pew's self-titled full length that came out last year with a new song on it. And that's actually what this new video has been put out for. And to echo the little thing that I wrote about this on the newsletter last week, it's really weird for me to see some of these Ontario bands like break I'm sure this happens for anyone that's from the scene where the band is from, but it's such like a weird amount of mixed feelings that I always have about it. So, and I felt this way like to a degree about Pop, and the same about the Dirty Nil when they started doing things at a bigger level than they were. Where like I look at Pew and I think about like where I first saw them, and it was like 2011. I saw them at the Scene Music Festival in St. Catharines. They opened they're one of like the opening bands at a fest, which like if you're an all day fest, that's a totally shit, you know, position to be in, where you're going to go, you know, there's still people waiting in line to get their wristbands or whatever. And you're going to go in some bar and play at like 12:15, right? Where like no one's even there yet. Everyone's filtering around the merch area if they're even in the area. It's the graveyard shift for being at a festival. So I went over, you know, went into this bar, saw them play. I had a lot of fun, but there was like 9 people there watching them. And they played a lot of the same songs in 2011 that are going to be on this reissue that Side One's putting out. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm like I've seen them play those songs. Then I picked up, you know, 7 inches that had those songs on them. I got the record that had those songs on them, and then those songs. Then it was sort of weird because Pew had this record that came out called Glory Days that, once they signed onto Pup's label here, the label sort of decided wasn't a record anymore. It was a weird thing where it was like, I started getting emails from their PR people about how like Pew Pew Pew's debut self-titled full length is going to come out. And I'm like, what do you mean debut? Cause I own their last record. And the person at the label was like,
yeah, wasn't it Pups who the album was like already out a year, and then they were like, we're going to debut this song, and it's like the song's been out a year just in Canada, but you can get it on the internet.
Yeah, well, yeah, like so, like the year that like Pup broke in the States was like a year after that record had been out in Canada, like a year after. It wasn't just like a December to January kind of year, like a year after that record had been out in Canada and was like old news here. But this was one where like they had a record that was out, like I can see it. It's on my shelf over here. And I asked the label, and I'm like, how is this their debut full length? Because didn't they have a debut full length? And I thought I was going to get a weird answer because like at one point, this band with a horrible name was called Pew 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 bracket gunshots bracket. Just to inject some horrible punctuation into the name, which is something that I love, of course. So I thought they were going to be like, oh no, that was the record from Pew 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 Gunshots, but now they're just called Pew Pew Pew, so it's technically a different band. Like I was expecting that level of dumb bullshit, but I actually got a weirder answer, which was like, oh well, that one didn't really have proper distribution, and it was a little bit short, so it's really considered more of an EP. And dip it, dip it. So it was like retroactively they downgraded it to EP, which is odd because it's a 12-inch record with 2 sides that has like 10 songs on it. Like I don't know how that all of a sudden becomes an EP, but that was what they decided, was that it was an EP after the fact. Anyways, that's the diversion. But like so these songs I heard again, 2011, 7-inch on this EP, then again on the full length that came out, and now those songs are again to be now put out on this Side One version of things. And I'm just thinking that like that has to be for the band so fucking exhausting, where they were looking and saying like, all right, like we got to make an artistic choice at some point where we're either going to go, you know what, no one listens to us, but who cares, let's go make more songs and we'll release more records and more songs and more records, and then maybe we'll just, you know, we'll fizzle out because we don't have any more money, but we've been prolific and that's that. But at some point they decided and they said like, you know what, no, we've got something. People who like us, but enough people haven't heard us. So we're not going to give up on this stuff that we're playing right now. We just kind of have to keep at it and play shows and get out with people and keep on working this material until the right people hear it and the right people hear it and the right people hear it. And then we can then we can kind of move on and start going from there. And I guess like that's the route that they took. And I can't argue with it necessarily because hell, they're on Side One Dummy now and they're going to be touring all over the States forever. So that's, I mean, that's good for them. It worked out. But I'm just thinking about like the slog of just being one of these bands when you're, you know, you haven't reached the end of that rainbow. You're just, you know, slugging through those same handfuls of songs, trying to get people to listen to it. It's like much like I'm super happy for Pew, but like my whole thing as I started to think about it was I'm just like fuck, they've been at this for a long time.
You know, I'd been meaning, well, first I have a few things to say, but I've been meaning to check this band out. I have a feeling this was not a good first song to listen to, the song in the video. Or is that about it?
I don't know. I mean, like they like 95% of their songs are about beer. They're not a serious band at all. But the one thing, I mean, this is not like a single. There's a song that is on that record, right, called Glory Days that I actually think is kind of profound in a way. Like the review that Punk News wrote of it that I did not write, but the review of Punk News that Punk News posted of it actually said it was like, it's like there's a little bit of like a Springsteen thing happening in that song, and it's almost not so much, it's not so much musically, but there's this like just this weariness that creeps through with it, and just looking at, you know, looking at the people in your hometown, the people from your high school age, and you know, like what they've settled for. And I don't know, like every once in a while, and you'll find funny bands that do this a lot where they're goofing along and they're goofing along and they're goofing along and they hit a nerve with something and then they go back to goofing along. So this is that kind of band, I think, but you know, they're a party punk band. Like they're like early, you know, compare them to something, and like I would compare them to like early Bouncing Souls in terms of seriousness, right? So that's definitely what they were doing. I'm shocked that I'm not shocked that they're on Side One, because they play like fun pop punk songs that people can totally get behind, but they have a dumb name and it's gonna be super hard to market them.
Well, that's the other thing I was gonna bring up is Side One Dummy. I'd seen like Pup talking about them also on like Twitter or something, and actually a few times, and or somewhere on social media. And Side One seems to really be collecting this, like they definitely don't have the same you know, catalog genre that they did like 10 years ago. Or even more, or even longer, maybe 15. But they have this weird, not weird, but just like, I don't even know. Like, are they trying to like kind of keep in these kinds of bands for themselves? And like, you know, like I can totally see like Pew 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 and Pup and Jeff Rosenstock doing a Side One Dummy tour together or something like that. Like
I feel
these bands like fit really well together.
Like Side One, and I give them a lot of credit for this, is that Side One is acting these days as like akin to what Fat and Epitaph were doing in the 90s, at least in my head. And it was weird because Side One was a genuinely strange label for a few years. Like they had that reputation of being, if I'm remembering correctly, like, did they not sort of start by doing the Warped Tour compilations? Were those not on Side One Dummy back in the day? Like, I think they were.
I think a few of them were.
Like Warped Tour, like, 99 or 2001 or anything like that. So, for a while, the bands that showed up on Side One Dummy were, the major label refugee bands, and they had that reputation for a while. Like, if you're the Mighty Mighty Bosstones and you've blown through your entire career and the majors won't have you anymore, but you're going to go make a new record, where do you go? You go to Side One Dummy. And that for a long time was the joke. Like, oh, you know, where's, you know, Green Day's at the end of their contract. Where are they going to go? Side One Dummy. Like that's what everyone was kidding about.
Didn't they put out a Suicide Machines record?
They may have put out that one of those posts. Yeah. They probably did. It had like a super political looking cover and it wasn't fun at all. What was it called? want to say Black Masks well, anyway. And Gasoline, but that's a Rise Against song. But it was something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, but
they had all these refugee bands, and then but then
imagine between some gasoline. That,
a mask and some gasoline. There we go. I was close, right? But they also had original stuff, but the original stuff, a lot of it seemed like they were taking a swing on some really unknown stuff to try to pump it up, but it never really caught on. Like, they had this band for a while. It was called Maxine, that kind of sounded like the Police, like early Police. Uh-huh. And like, I don't know whatever happened to them, but there was a while where they had like a handful of these bands that like, they must just be like bands that were gigging around LA or wherever Side One Dummy is. And they kind of plucked them out of that scene. But like there was a while where it didn't feel like there was a huge identity going on there, but hit some sort of nerve now, because like a lot of these young punk bands, and like Pop is sort of probably like the best example of that, are out there playing with them now, where it almost feels that like Epitaph would have been like one of the obvious places for those bands to go in the 90s. Like today, it doesn't feel like it. Like we're going to talk about Epitaph actually later in a little bit, but like, you know, like I'm not sure what kind of band feels like they end up on Epitaph. Like, I feel like the bands have to be a little bit more mature.
I disagree, Adam. You're saying Epitaph is more mature? I disagree. I think Epitaph.
I don't know. I don't think more mature, like in terms of like they have career longevity, but I feel like Epitaph's trying to do something that's more like more serious.
Why does it?
I guess.
Have you seen those Falling in Reverse music videos?
I meant the version of Epitaph that we like to acknowledge, not the version that we don't. So the version that we don't is Falling in Reverse and all those kinds of bands. I'm sort of talking about the Epitaph that's like got like the Garden signed to them.
No, I disagree entirely, Adam. I wouldn't say the Garden is a mature band in that way. I would say the Garden is a very artistic band and very weird band. What I would say that Epitaph is doing three things. Epitaph is signing, you know, the classic punk bands, Descendants, that they know they'll make X amount of dollars on. They're signing the screamo bands aimed at like 14-year-olds that make a ton of cash, and even Mr. Brett acknowledges that he hates. And they're signing the weird bands that Mr. Brett loves that only a small certain subset of hip people like The Garden. By contrast, I think Side One Dummy is signing a bunch of bands that I would call as the Chris Gethard crew, or I would call I'm not dissing AJ. Is AJJ Side One Dummy? I forget. Yeah. I'm not dissing AJJ. I'm definitely not dissing Jeff Rosenstock. I'm not dissing Pup. I'm not dissing Pew Pew Pew. Like that's new punk, if you will. None of those bands are really punk to me, with the exception of maybe Rosenstock. But I mean, those bands really are more to me indie rock. And I think what Side One Dummy is doing is they're marketing towards the more mature mentally more mature younger person. The younger person that is somewhat educated, that is interested in art, that has adopted a certain general set of ways to communicate and general beliefs, general set of beliefs, whereas the Epitaph's crew is, if it's, you know, the Falling in Reverse guys, just chaos and stupid 15-year-olds, where Side One Dummy is aiming for the more, I guess, reserved and quiet 15 to 25-year-old. I disagree.
I can kind of see where you're going there, but the few that would like break that or that seem to counter that is Epitaph went and signed like both Joyce Manor and the Sidekicks, and like, by that definition, I would almost feel that like the Joyce Manor and the Sidekicks, based on your definition of it, would fit in more over on the Side One end.
Oh, I could totally see Joyce Manor going to Side One, being on Side One. If that would happen.
Touche, Adam. I agree with that. But
I mean, analogies aren't perfect, but I get what you're saying. Yeah,
I agree. That's a good counterattack. I don't have a. Well, my only response to that is that's one aspect of Epitaph, but it seems that Side One is strictly trying to create, and I think they are creating a new subset of, I don't want to call it punk, I'll call it indie rock, of these bands that are, you know, we care about your feelings. We want to create safe spaces. And I don't mean this derogatorily. I mean, these are the values that we share. So we're going to build a scene around that. And I think to a very real degree, Side One Dummy has been key in bringing a larger audience to that scene. I wouldn't say they invented the scene, but through Rosenstock, through AJJ, through these Canadians as they've been signing, through even these rappers that I can't stand, like Astronautilus or whatever, that guy, I can't stand that guy. They're increasing that scene.
So
my main premise was like, Side One clearly has a musical identity now. And they definitely have a niche of bands that they've grown, I think, quite well, whether you like them or not. And I love, you know, AJJ, Pup, and a few other bands. So, I will definitely check out Pew Pew Pew. I've been meaning to for a while.
We've been talking about Epitaph. Let's hop right into that, because Epitaph this week signed Culture Abuse, which released one of my favorite records of last year, which was called Peach. And I forget what label Peach even came out on. You will remember that we talked a little bit about some nonsense involving Culture Abuse and what was that fucking band?
The Allman Brothers.
Well, not the Allman Brothers, but
Skrillex.
Skrillex, and yeah, from first to last, right? Because everyone had a peach on their record, and there was a conflict.
Oh yeah.
But in any case, Culture Abuse to me has always been a super rad band. I think that like vocally, there's not a lot of, I don't know, I don't think anyone sounds like them right now. Like, they're just, the band is a cool sound to me. So they have signed Epitaph. They are going to be releasing an album called So Busted. They have released a single from that record that is that the song. So yeah, so they put out the song So Busted, or maybe that's not the name of the record. Let's find out.
I think it's just the name of the song. They haven't named the
record. Anyways, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So Busted is the song that they put out. It's way more like, it's a little bit quieter for Culture Abuse if you know their old stuff. It's more melodic than the last record. At least it seems so to me. So that's kind of interesting. But anyways, they have gone and signed to Epitaph, and they are like, I don't know how they at all fit into that dichotomy that you laid out a minute ago, because they're one of those bands that I know from the internet, where, you know, I heard Dream On, which was the song that everyone was going crazy about from their last record, and, you know, was instantly in love with that song, and, you know, picked up the record, and it has a great sound, and I liked it and all that. But like, I don't know who Culture Abuse plays with, or even sort of what scene they are, or like shit, I didn't know anything about the band. They could have been like a bunch of 75-year-old men for all I knew, right? So them on Epitaph is sort of news, in that I'm like, oh, okay, they exist in that universe. I mean, they're playing a show with Green Day and Rancid soon, so hey.
Oh yeah, I saw that. By the way, Adam, Peach came out on 6131.
6131.
Yeah, that's according to the review. Never heard of it either.
I just keep thinking, what's Henry Rollins' label called? Anyone remember? It has a number in it like that. I bet you there's a 16 in it. Rollins. This is important for the people to know what Henry Rollins' label was. His label was 21361. Okay, anyways, continue.
I heard a little bit of Peach. I really didn't follow the band that much, but good for them for going to Epitaph. I mean, why not? That's cool.
Every once in a while, Epitaph surprises me, because I assume that they are off on a different tangent than whatever I'm listening to, and then they'll step in and sign a band that I care about. And it always sort of throws me, because I'm like, now I have to reconcile this with all of your falling in verses. Thanks.
Well, no, I mean, listen, Epitaph has put out what bad, I mean, Bad Religion, the Menzingers one, came out this year.
Oh, you don't need to sell me on the merits of Epitaph. Like, I grew up with that label. It's just, it's very much like a, it feels like Epitaph is like, was like my best friend in high school, and I haven't seen them in 15 years. And then we see each other at a wedding or something like that. Right.
Is it awkward, or do you fall in like old times?
It's mostly awkward, but you try, we should rekindle something. Like we had a good thing going here.
But when you say we should rekindle something, are you just being polite, or do you actually mean you should bro down again?
We should bro down, but at the end of the wedding, we're each going to go to like the 2 hour away from each other cities that we live in. So it's not going to happen.
It just wasn't meant to be.
It's just, we're just not going to bro down, but because you can't.
Are you friends on Facebook still?
Oh, God. Probably like nominally.
Yeah. Like you don't even like see their things in your stream anymore, whatever it's called.
This is really hitting close to home, because there are people like this in my life where I'm like, there are people that were in my wedding party that I totally still consider lifelong friends, but like I have not seen in 10 years.
Hey, man,
and,
that's cold, man.
Every once in a while I'll look on. Well, they just live in other places now, right? So then like if they're around, we'd see each other, but they're just not. And then like I'll look on Facebook and they're like, oh, they posted a picture of a bird from a camping trip that they were on or something, right? And it doesn't make sense to me to all of a sudden pop in and be like, man, nice bird. It's just like, they're just doing their thing and I'm just doing my thing. And just,
as much as I hate Facebook and technology, I will say that because of Facebook, I am still always somewhat friends with many of my high school friends that without Facebook, I would have fallen out of contact with.
Honestly, my read is that I use Facebook to try to make people who knew me in high school think that I live some sort of bizarre life now. That's what I hope. I hope that like one of them occasionally goes, oh yeah, Adam, why, who is that? Well, what's that guy doing now? And they go on and it's me ranting about like some garage rock band and,
You know what's
funny? Makes me look far more interesting than I am.
You know what's funny, Adam, is even though you're a family man, you got a wife and kids and stuff, is I've got a lot of, I guess, acquaintances from Facebook. I've deleted a bunch of them. But you look at them and you're like, wow, I am so different than them. And you probably experienced that too. You know what I mean? It's like in high school, not that everyone's the same, but everyone's gone kind of through the same thing. So everyone can kind of communicate at the same level. And then you see what they're up to. They're like, I don't know. I'm selling Tupperware. Come to my Tupperware party. And I'm like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like you see how distant you are, how different people that you knew in high school that weren't that different from you then are so entirely different from you now. Do you experience that, or you don't experience that?
Yeah, I feel that like the Facebook algorithm now has decided that like I don't need to see a lot of those people anymore. So all it shows me is like what you dumb shits are doing most of the time. So
putting on awesome shows, summer soirée.
Yeah, so it's weird. I feel like the big electronic brain that runs the world's social media has decided that like whatever I was there for in the first place, which was to keep track of these acquaintances that I know but don't get to see all that often, instead it's going to cherry pick a couple people that I find horribly annoying, not you, John, and expose me to most of what they do. That's what it works. It's just like,
see, I don't know if you did mean me or not, because Adam White can be frighteningly passive aggressive sometimes on Facebook.
No, I don't. I mean, I would expect to see you and I, I mean, trying to think of how their algorithm works, right? Like you and I interact a lot on Facebook because of like the punk news groups and things like that. So I would sort of expect it to prioritize, say, stuff from you. But like there's people that are like, there's like a couple of my wife's friends that like, I don't know, like they do nothing but like post, like they're involved in these like multi-level marketing schemes where they're like trying to sell like workout supplements or something like that. So part of what they have to do is like go onto Facebook every day and like talk to the camera about their workouts or whatever like annoying shit that people that are involved in these scams have to do, right? But it's like, I don't know why, but Facebook's like, you want to hear from this person, don't you? And I'm like, no, like, I really don't. Like, I want to hear from these friends that I sadly haven't seen in 10 years. Like, I want to see those people. I don't want to see these dumb shits and their marketing scam, but that's what it gives me.
Man,
I don't know. What are we talking about?
Should I play a song?
Should we? I guess. Pew, pew. Yeah, you should. Anyways, pew, 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 sign the side, one dummy. You should probably go check them out. Culture Abuse is on Epitaph. You should also go check them out. Ricky's going to play you a song now.
All right. So we had Natters on episode 350, where we brought a bunch of bands to do quick interviews. And I played one of a song off their first release last year, which is their demo, which is great. On June 23rd, they released their another EP called Toxicare. And I think it was through Boss Tunage Records and Serial Bull Records. They're one of my, I'm in the midst of reviewing this EP right now, and they're really coming to their own. They're really doing, and this EP is great. It's really great. So I'm going to play a song from it called Surf Off by Natterers. Check it out. Check out the whole EP though. This is, this is Surf Off by Natterers. Here it is.
We're back. Here's what's going to happen. This is going to be, we're going to orchestrate this perfectly. John Gentile, Punk News features editor, Man About Town, is going to talk at you about the dwarves for the next 5 minutes, and I'm going to go get a glass of water. So here we go. Go.
Okay. The dwarves are going to put out a new album. It's going to be called The Dwarves Take Back the Night. I am very excited about this record. As everyone knows, I'm a big Dwarves fan. The new record is described as a Dwarves posse record, which means member of the Dwarves all the way from the beginning in 1983 until now make appearances on it. And rumors are that it will be one of their more hardcore records as opposed to their pop punk records or experimental records. Who's to say? Although I am very excited for this, and the Dwarves are phenomenal. I saw them at Punk Rock Bowling, and I would say they may have had they did have the best show of the entire festival, Punk Rock Bowling, Asbury Park. Crazy in the Brains coming in at a strong number two. Ricky, are you excited for the new Dwarves record, or are you Dwarves out? I thought you were a Dwarves fan for a while, but it seemed like you were getting kind of burnt out on them. Is that correct? Oh, no.
No. I'm totally into this. I pre-ordered the
Julio EP.
Julio EP. Yeah, I pre-ordered the deluxe version.
Yeah, what's the difference between what is the deluxe version? I ordered that too, but I don't even know what it is.
I didn't see too much in the description. I saw a different color, like apparently it's like tricolor Mexican flag. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything else other than that. I haven't heard a song from it yet. I've just pre-ordered it because I liked it. I really do like this band. I saw them a bunch last year. What gave you the idea I was Dwarves out?
Because when we were talking about Punk Rock Bowling, I was like, man, I saw the Dwarves and they were awesome. And you kind of gave a laugh of indifference or even a laugh of dismissal.
Oh, no, no, no. I was laughing because it sounded just like such a ridiculously good time. Mm. I guess I just didn't really verbalize it. But
sure, Ricky, good save, good save.
All right, fine. I think I saw the Dwarves last year, like 4 or 5 times.
Oh, wow.
I'm not kidding. They did a bunch of shows around here and played Punk Rock Bowling. So I'm stoked on this. I thought the Dwarves Invented Rock and Roll was really great. Now the thing about this announcement that we put on was the second paragraph that I thought was very interesting.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people think that was interesting, Ricky. Let's talk about another topic. We'll talk about Peter Tosh's son, who, and if you want to talk about more about that, Ricky, we can talk off air. Tosh's son was beat, and he's a reggae artist that goes by the name of Tosh1. Back in February, he was in jail back in February, serving a 6-month sentence for being found with 65 pounds of marijuana in the trunk of his car, which seemed like a lot of marijuana to me. I mean, that seemed like a lot of marijuana.
Yeah,
you seem to know, Ricky. Interesting. Anyway.
That's a fun weekend right there.
Hey, I went to school in NorCal. What do you expect? I learned some of this stuff.
Anyway, quite unfortunately, Tosh1 was attacked in jail in February and beaten into a coma. And the reason it just came to news this week or came to light this week was because the McIntosh family. But I don't think it was on the Peter Tosh side. I think it was on Jawara McIntosh, Tosh1's mother's side. They were requesting information behind the beating and how did this happen. Well, lo and behold, after they threatened to sue, an explanation came to light, and who knows if it's an actual explanation, but apparently Jawara was attacked by an inmate called I got his name right here. He was attacked by a fellow inmate. The attack lasted about 10 seconds, and he was put in a coma with a traumatic brain injury, and he's still in a coma right now. He was attacked by a guy called Kiri Baum, who was charged but not convicted of gun charges and some other kind of violent crime. There's a lot to take from this. We're kind of running out of time, but I want to do quickly deference to Tosh1. One of the reasons I put this in here was one of the first interviews I ever did was with Tosh1, and at the time I thought he was really young, but actually he was older than me. But he just seemed like such a nice kid. It's kind of a sad story. He's Peter Tosh's son, but he never met Peter Tosh. He talked to Peter Tosh on the phone once, and Peter Tosh said, "Oh, I'm going to come visit you," but he never did. So you could tell that he really wished he had met his father and had spent time with Peter Tosh, the famous reggae singer. At the time, he was kind of making his living doing Peter Tosh songs. And before I interviewed him, I thought, that's kind of cheesy, just singing your dad's song. That's corny, you know, kind of like the Marley kids. But then I realized, like, listen, if your dad's a baker and you go into baking, there's a certain nobility to that or a certain respect to that. And I realized, listen, Peter Tosh's message certainly is a fundamentally important message. Who better to continue that message after Peter Tosh's death than Peter Tosh's son? So Tosh1 completely changed my perspective of sons of musicians singing their parents' music. I actually think it's a noble cause, and there's no one more fitting to do it than the kids, if you will. To the second point is this does underscore a problem that we have in the American prison system, in that Jawara was serving for a nonviolent crime, and he got beaten nearly to death by a guy that was charged with a violent crime. 65 pounds is a lot of marijuana, but listen, if no one killed or beat anybody or shot anybody ever, and all those people did was sell 65 pounds of marijuana, then the world would be a much nicer place, you know. So I'm against marijuana, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. And so I think it's quite tragic that someone that was doing 6 months for a nonviolent crime was attacked, and he'll probably never recover by someone who did a violent crime. So why are these two people serving the same sort of sentence when their crimes are entirely different? The last thing people said, people who are often on their high and mighty horse about, you know, this and that, there's like, what? And the point of being on the high and mighty horse is compassion. They're like, why are we talking about this guy? The reason we're talking about him is because he's a musician. We talk about music at Punk News. You know, they're like, why are you talking about other people that got attacked in prison? Because they're not musicians and they're not at least tangentially related to punk rock. So I don't know. Those are just my thoughts on Tosh1. I hope he gets better, but it's probably not looking too good.
Yeah, nothing to add there. That's, you know, we're happy to share that story there. So I guess we should, we'll do one final one here. Can we skip the last story? Because I don't care.
Yeah. You don't like Weird Al?
I don't.
You should mention it. I mean,
we mentioned it. So we should mention
Weird Al's going to walk on the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Next story, Adam. Wait, go ahead.
Next story. Yeah. All right. So the last one here that we want to mention, the Lillingtons. I said it correctly. Haha. Have signed to Fat Wreck along with their. I don't know what cousins in Teenage Bottle Rocket there. So the band is going to be releasing a new full length on the label later this year. There's no other details. They recently released the Project 313 EP on Red Scare. So the Lillingtons, as we've discussed in the past, share a lot of the personnel of Teenage Bottle Rocket. So if you're familiar with Teenage Bottle Rocket, you're definitely familiar with these guys. Predated Teenage Bottle Rocket, actually, and have more of like a, I don't know, like a weird sci-fi bent to the stuff that they put out. And that's my description. And Ricky, you're a fan.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought they had put something out a long time ago on Fat, but it turned, I looked through their Fat Records profile and they got nothing. So I've never seen them live. I've had one chance to see them and I blew it. But yeah, like I said when we were talking about records earlier, the 313 EP, Project 313 EP is really good. I think, did Tom Trauma review that one? He gave it a good score, I believe. So I'm going to be looking out for this whenever it goes up for pre-order. I think I'm going to give these guys, I'm definitely going to throw some money at these guys and see what they have. But yeah, I'm excited.
My opinion of the Lillingtons is I'm going to use my Lillington time to continue to talk about Peter Tosh. This is one thing I wanted to mention and no one else mentioned this at all. And I wasn't sure if it was appropriate to mention this or not. And Adam and Ricky, you can quickly respond to this is Tosh One was serving time in jail for marijuana possession and was beaten horribly. Do you know who else was beaten horribly in jail and suffered lifelong damage for having marijuana? Peter Tosh. Ooh. Like it's a famous part in Peter Tosh's careers. I think it was 1973 he was arrested and put in jail for possessing marijuana, which is still a big crime in Jamaica. It was real big in 1973. He only had like a joint or something. And then the police came in and beat the shit out of him and cracked his skull open. And the legend, and who knows if this is real or not, the legend is that he was never quite the same afterwards, which explains why he's kind of edgy and weird and kind of cagey is a better word, after 1973 on his solo albums. Who knows if that's true or not, but he definitely was beaten in jail by the cops for having marijuana. Isn't that eerie how a very similar thing happened to his son?
It's weird. And also, head trauma in itself is weird. I mean, you could be an inch from death in some cases and you'll be fine. It's just, I don't know. I've been concussed once and it's not fun. Okay. I'm not comparing myself to what these guys went through, but, head trauma's like not fun at all. It's just
would it have been appropriate to mention the Peter Tosh parallel to this, or would that just be weird and kind of a weird coincidence to point out?
It's kind of weird all around, to be honest.
Adam, why do you have?
I want to know how Ricky got a concussion. Can I know? Is it a punctuary's appropriate story?
Yes.
Hockey injury?
Yeah, I mean, if no. Do we have time? Are we cool?
Let's save it until next time, and the listeners can wait, hold on, bated breath.
Yeah, write in. Tell us why you think Ricky got a concussion.
Oh, that's going to be so, oh, you should not.
Okay, so I'm going to play a song. this is a Culture Abuse song off their last album, so this is Culture Abuse.
right, we're back. If you do want to write us and explain why Ricky got a concussion in the past or why he might get one in the future, you can write us at podcast@punknews.org. Thanks, Mr. Gregory Simpson, for producing this in your wonderful studio of magic and sparkles. And is that it? Do we have anything else?
That's it.
That's it. You should go to the Punk News thing in Philly.
Yes, you should.
I'm selling tickets.
August 12th, eventbrite.com is where you can get tickets. World Inferno, Posers, Crazy in the Brains, Push It to the Limit. We're going to be playing Punk's Points. We might be playing the Punk News dating game. We're going to have a cassette for sale. It is going to be awesome. Adam White has seen my plans. Adam White, tell the kids it's going to be awesome.
Everyone's going to be naked.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.